Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Text number 36. Reading from Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 19, text number 36, The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha. Tam Sukarajam Rijhubhi
Tam Sukarajam Rijhubhi
Ananya Saranhen Ribhi
Ananya Saranhen Ribhi
Kita gyako na sevata
Kita gyako na sevata
Dura rajham asadubhi
Dura rajham asadubhi
Tam sukha rajham rijubhi
Tam sukha rajham rijubhi
Ananya saranhan ribhi
Ananya saranhan ribhi
Kita gyako na sevata Dura rajham asadubhi
Dura rajham asadubhi
Tam sukha rajham rijhubhi
Tam sukha rajham rijhubhi
Ananya saranhan ribhi
Ananya saranhan ribhi
Vita gyako na sivata
Vita gyako na sivata
Dura rajham Unto him, sukha, easily, arajham, worshipped, rijubhi, by the unpretentious, ananya, no other, saranai,
he takes shelter,
nribhi, by men, kritigya,
Grateful soul.
Ka. What? Na.
Not.
Sevita.
Would render service.
Durajham. Impossible to be worshipped.
Asadubhi.
By the non devotees. What grateful soul is there who would not render his loving service to such a great master as the Personality of Godhead? The Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection. Though the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate him. Let's do that responsibly. What grateful soul is there?
What grateful soul is there?
Who would not render his loving service?
Who would not render his loving service?
To such a great master as the Personality of Godhead.
To such a great master as the Personality of Godhead.
The Lord can be easily pleased by his spotless devotees.
The Lord can be easily pleased by his spotless devotees.
Who resort exclusively to him for protection.
Though the unrighteous man
finds it difficult to propitiate him. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Every living entity, especially persons in the human race, must feel grateful for the benedictions offered by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Anyone, therefore, with a simple heart of gratefulness must be Krishna conscious and offer devotional service to the Lord. Those who are actually thieves and rogues do not recognize or acknowledge the benedictions offered to them by the Supreme Lord, and they cannot render him devotional service. Ungrateful persons are those who do not understand how much benefit they are deriving by the arrangement of the Lord. They enjoy the sunshine and moonshine, and they get water free of charge. Yet they do not feel grateful, but simply go on enjoying these gifts of the Lord. Therefore, they must be called thieves and rogues. Persons who are ungrateful, unrighteous, they're referred to here, Srila Prabhupada refers to them in his purport. So they're called asadubi in the Sanskrit. Prabhupada just puts it very simply, thieves and rogues. So one who is, so you have the simple-hearted person who is grateful to the Lord, and everyone else is a thief and a rogue. Now that is mentioned here in the Bhagavad Gita. In the third chapter. Text number 12 says, Ishtan bhogan hivo deva dasyante yagibhavitaha tadatam apajadyebhyo yobhunkte stena evasa. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, or worship of the Lord, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. So this is the scriptural confirmation that one can rightly call others thieves. Prabhupada also calls them rogues, or I think in India they call them gundas. Gundas. When Prabhupada was in Mayapur, he said, in Mayapur, there are many, many gundas now, and their business is simply to cause trouble. So, there are thieves. Thieves, of course, are those. Everyone is taking that which is supplied by the Lord through the agency of the demigods. So, if there's no acknowledgement, no yajna, when we do yajna, although there's so many elaborate methods of yajna, simply, in essence, it's really just saying thank you. That's it. That's what yajna means. Thank you. Actually, someone said the other day that we're talking about. Someone was saying that someone from the Indian community was not saying please and thank you, and the person replied, "Oh, it's not in our culture. We don't use the word please and thank you." So I don't know if that's would that be correct? Is that they don't often do that? Yet here, according to the Bhagavad Gita, it is in the culture. And that's what yajna is. Thank you. That's what it means. So I don't know where they got that from. But we tend to follow the Mahajans, not others. So, it just struck me as an unusual statement. I thought, I can't really believe that that's not part of it. Because, they're actually probably one of the most courteous, cultures on this planet. And it just, when someone said that, I thought, that's not right, how can they really be representing, Have you heard that? Yeah, really? Yeah. So it was the first time I heard it, but where's that coming from? You know, that couldn't be coming. But, you know, jagya means thank you. You know, so it is part of the culture, but maybe it's been forgotten. So, you know, one who doesn't say thank you, and especially to the Supreme Lord, and of course that can be done through jagya, of which in, you know, Kali Yuga, the jagya is principally the Sankirtan jagya, chanting Hare Krishna. Doesn't mean we don't perform samskaras, you know, samskaras, we also light a sacred fire or do some prayers, you know. Srila Prabhupada was asked about samskaras because, you know, they're sort of just thrown in generally with other jagyas as if they're forbidden in Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada says, yes, we follow the minimum, you know. So, things, and you know, mentioned samskaras, so there's garbhadan samskara, there's marriage. If we don't follow samskaras, then none of the devotees will be getting married because marriage is a samskara. You know, there's no question that we, you know, somehow these things are forbidden. You know, sometimes devotees ask, you know, why are you doing samskaras? They're forbidden, you know. You can only do Sankirtana Jagya. Okay, so don't get married. Don't take Brahman initiation. Don't take sannyas. Don't take diksha. They're all samskaras. They're not forbidden. So the minimum we do. And other jagyas, you know, we don't try and perform jagyas to go to the moon planet or, you know, Rajasiya jagya and, you know, Ashwamedha jagya, and you cannot offer a cow and a horse and this, that, and so many things like that. But one should not confuse that with just, you know, the general samskaras. But in general, whenever we, you know, every, you know, even within the samskaras, they usually take place at, you know, the major junctions of life, the major milestones of life, and within that, all those samskaras incorporate the worship of the Lord. You know, that by the grace of the Lord, I am initiating the next phase of life, and by His grace, I've come to this point, so thank you. And by His grace, may I grow from this juncture of life and become more successful. So it is something like with the bamboo. You know, when the bamboo grows, every so often there is a hard knot. And that hard knot means that whatever growth comes from that platform is then supported by that hard knot. Without that, it will grow, and a little wind, immediately broken. So at the milestone, you know, points of our life, the foundation or the hard knot, the platform for further growth, is you know, based upon those samskaras. Just like when we take initiation, diksha initiation, that's a samskara. That means that process of taking shelter of the guru is the foundation of your growth in spiritual life on that platform. Without it, there's not, you know, your spiritual standing, little problem, little agitation from the material energy, everything topples over. Okay? So they create that foundation. And within that foundation, we acknowledge the Supreme Lord's gifts previously and then and in the future. So others who don't have that mentality to acknowledge the Supreme Lord or the spiritual master, they're thieves and rogues or gundas. So gundas means... Their business is just to cause trouble. So, and it says here, yeah. It It says here that ungrateful persons who do not understand how much benefit they are deriving by the arrangement of the Lord, they enjoy the sunshine and moonshine and they get water free of charge, yet they do not feel grateful but simply go on enjoying these gifts of the Lord. Therefore, they must be called thieves and rogues. And of course, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, when there is that mentality, and also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then material nature will restrict. So just like, you know, Prabhupada gives the example of, you know, if we have electricity coming from the electric company and you don't pay your bill, everything cut off like that. I saw on the news the other day there was a couple who set up a business for sound equipment, and what they did on their credit card, they invested about $8,000 to purchase equipment and set up that business. So then what happened is when the business started, you know, they're enjoying the profits, but there wasn't enough for enjoying the profits and paying back the credit card. So what they did was they just didn't pay back the credit card. They just sort of took the enjoyment part of it. And then what happened is that the bank decided that, you know, they wanted their money. So they passed on, they sold the debt to a company. So they have the right to do that. So then that debt then accrued huge fees and legal costs. And within the course of a year, that $8,000 credit card debt rose to about $300,000. And then the bank decided that they would then take the house. So they came in with, the debt collectors came in with the police, and they simply changed all the locks on the house and on the gate and locked everything up, all the possessions. So they had no access to the house, which is now going to be sold by the bank. And in order to fight that, it will probably cost the rest of the value of the house. And either way, win or lose, they lose. So it's a very dangerous business. And the demigods is the same, you know, that you know, if one does not pay that debt, it's a very serious business. We see now, you know, in Victoria that, you know, the water is starting to be restricted. That I think in Geelong, I think the dams are down to about 30%, not even through summer yet. And I think, in, you know, the Melbourne supply is something like about 60% or something like that, and going down rapidly. And now they're trying to start up the desalination plant. And that desalination plant, of course, has cost them billions since they opened it. And we've never used a drop of it yet. And they're thinking that they will, you know, start using that water, but it will cost billions, you know, to get the water we need. So expect your water bills to go up. So it's like that, the compound interest. So you didn't pay, so now you know, even if we give you the water, it's going to cost you a lot, plus the interest for what you didn't pay before, and a little bit of punishment. So these things are coming. Now, the Lord here, Lord Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, he explained all these things. He has described that, he says, you know, one should be very grateful for the benedictions offered by the grace of the Supreme Lord. And we see here that, you know, Krishna explained all these things very easily. He summed up what Krishna did in the Bhagavad Gita was that he summed up the essence of all religious principles in 700 verses. And that means that all the teachings within Christianity, within the Muslim religion, within Judaism, you know, within the various religions of the world, and all the Vedas, all of those religious principles are summed up in one book, one place, in 700 verses. And then, even then, he says, I've given an understanding of all the various different paths you can follow. To make it more simple, don't bother about the other paths. Just one thing, surrender unto me, and all religious principles done. So in one instruction, Krishna says, you follow that, you follow all religious principles. So he made it very, very simple. And one may question, then it must be very difficult to surrender to Krishna. No? What does he ask? You think of me, always think of me, offer your obeisances. So, thinking, so you can do that sitting down. offering the obeisances and touching the head to the ground. It's very simple. And become my devotee. So, just develop a friendly service attitude to the Lord, and worship me, offer your homage unto me, offering homage. So means that you don't have to flatter all the different demigods and what have you. You just very respectfully praise Krishna in a very respectful way. That's homage. So when you take initiation from a guru, that's offering homage. Because that's submission in a very respectful and even official way. That's like homage or taking initiation from a spiritual master. So those things, very, very easy. And he has given that. So he gave that instruction in the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago. And he found that, in Kali Yuga, he saw that no one is following. Even when Krishna gave that instruction, we see that in his time, apart from his activities in Vrindavan, in Vrindavan, there was the some demon may have been killed, a personality. Mostly to facilitate the pastimes of enjoying, with his the Brajavasis. In Vrindavan, Krishna's activities can be divided into two generally. But in Vrindavan, Parichanaya Sadhanam, Vinishaya Chaduskutam, Parichanaya Sadhanam, as it says here, the sadhus, the Lord's business is to always give pleasure to his devotees, to give him the association. So he enjoyed with his devotees. And some demons were killed as part of his pastimes, his playful pastimes with his devotees, to facilitate those enjoyable moves. But actually from Mathura pastimes and, at the age of 16, he left Vrindavan. He was on the planet for 125 years altogether. So most of the other time in Mathura and Dwarka and other places was pretty much killing on a big scale, millions and millions and millions. So mostly killing. Who are those people killing? That they're not accepting, Krishna's instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of Kali Yuga, then it was understood that, they're not following Bhagavad Gita. They're following anything but the Bhagavad Gita. That's what you find generally. If you speak to people about, it's quite interesting because you speak to people, have you read the Bhagavad Gita? Even sometimes within the Hindu community or the Indian community, it's like they'll read anything but. It's almost like there's a resistance, to it, So that, there's a lip service. Yes, I've read it, so don't ask me again. I heard it from my grandmother, all right? You're right? Finish. But, to actually take up the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. And, of course, Prabhupada, will speak very plainly why that is. Because Krishna asked them to, in the Bhagavad Gita, he asked you to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in many scriptures and many concocted philosophies, it's that principle of surrendering to Krishna which is blatantly absent. And even when they study the Bhagavad Gita, even those who have read the Bhagavad Gita, if they haven't studied Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, the part that's missing is surrender to Krishna. You can hear Bhagavad Gita from people who have studied the Bhagavad Gita, and that part is always missing, surrender to Krishna. Everything else, they'll do. That's the point. That's why, you know, there's an aversion to the Bhagavad Gita. I read anything. So, therefore, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he understood Advaita Acharya, he understood in Kali Yuga, they all thieves and gundas, rogues. And therefore, he thought, now I have to make it even more easy. So, there's this nice verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, the second verse. There's Vande, this is the Adi Lila chapter 1. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Nityananda Sahodito, Kododaye Pushpavanto, Chitro Sandho Tamo Nudo. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and the moon. They have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Gauda to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. So, in Kali Yuga, everyone is in the dense darkness, and even this knowledge, you know, which has been simplified in the Bhagavad Gita, is unknown. Prabhupada questioned, you know, when people may say, darkness, Kali Yuga, everyone's so well educated, we have so many universities, people have so many degrees, they're all well dressed, they live in, you know, nice houses in certain parts of the world. How can you say darkness? He said, yes, all in darkness. What is the proof? What do you think Prabhupada gave as a proof? What is the proof that they're in darkness?
No one knows who Krishna is.
What's that? What were you going to say? Yes, yes, that is the darkness, but what is the proof that they're in that darkness? Actually, Rasa, you got it. That's right. It's very simple. You ask someone, you know, that can you tell me a little bit of something about Krishna? And they don't know. That means they're all in darkness. That's the proof. And so they can, you know, they'll be very well educated, and you know, they don't know anything about Krishna. If they have heard something about Krishna, it's some, you know, bogus nonsense coming down. But simply, they don't understand anything about Krishna. What to speak of Bhagavad Gita and Krishna's main instruction, really the whole Bhagavad Gita. One time Prabhupada said, he said in Bhagavad Gita there's one instruction. He said, so many verses, but actually there's one instruction, surrender unto me. That they do not know. So here, Krishna and Balaram appeared again to dissipate the darkness. Lord Sri Krishna, he is, in his, he is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by expanding his pleasure potency, who is Radharani, he manifests his eternal pleasure potency pastimes in the spiritual world. That personality, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, appeared in the mood of Radharani as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Sri Krishna appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Nityananda, he is Balaram. So those two brothers who were there in Vrindavan, and Mathura and Dwarka, they appeared again. Lord Nityananda is Balaram. That we take from the Acharyas, from the Mahajans. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he showed us that spiritual life is very easy, that what the great professors, you know, the greatest of all self-realized and God-realized personalities, what they say, you simply follow that, that's very easy. Just like Srila Prabhupada once said, he said, this Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is for advanced devotees, advanced students. He said, what does advanced mean? So just like here, in the purport, it says that the Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection. And in the purport, he says, anyone, therefore, with a simple heart of gratefulness must be Krishna conscious and offer devotional service to the Lord. So, and in the Sanskrit, it says, Rijubir by the unpretentious, Ananya no other. So, Prabhupada says, advanced means that you understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you understand that, you're advanced. And then you can understand Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, even if you accept it blindly, you are still advanced, and then you can understand the teaching. So, because the teachings of Chaitanya Charitamrita and the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam are the same. Krishna said, surrender unto me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, surrender unto Krishna. So if you understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you can understand both. In the same teaching. Just like fire, you know, if someone said, you go and sit by the fire, you'll get warm. And someone says, but I don't understand how fire can, you know, keep you warm. That's okay, you just go sit there. Take it from me. Go and sit there. You'll get the same benefit as Professor Einstein, who understands the atomic structure of fire and everything like that, and he'll go, they'll both get the same warmth. Not as if one is even getting more than the other. Oh, Einstein sits near the fire, he knows so much about it, he gets warmer than the other one. No. Yeah. So Prabhupada said, he said, so if you understand Krishna as the Supreme Person of Godhead, you are advanced. Whether you accept it with full knowledge or blindly, he said, but take it from me, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Person of Godhead. Take it from me. And so, you know, you can imagine, you know, back in 1973, 1975, Prabhupada, Mayapur, saying that. People have come from all over the world, different devotees. Some of them, you know, they'd only just, the Chaitanya Charitamrita was just coming out, and, you know, not all of his books were published, and I think they were still just, you know, starting doing lifetime from life, and, you know, so many people hadn't heard, you know, just a few lectures of Prabhupada, if any. For a lot of them, it's the first time they're even seeing Prabhupada. He says, take it from me. And pretty much everyone just said, oh, well, that's good enough for me. I'll take it from Prabhupada. He knows. Why wouldn't he know? He's you know, coming in the line of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is, very experienced devotee, establishing temples all over the world, initiating thousands of devotees. Doing something which no one has ever before done, and that is, raising the lowest persons within a short time to, nice paka brahmanas and devotees. Why wouldn't you take it from someone like that with that sort of expertise? Why wouldn't you? Why would you instead, discuss philosophy with the hippies who are, also into a little bit Indian philosophy and taking the LSD and this, that and the other, or so many different people, in Bengal in those days, probably still today, you have the Nityananda Vamsa. They're saying, if you want, to attain perfection, then you must come to us because we're coming in the family of Lord Nityananda. Even though we're not practicing anything, but still we're in that family, So, why wouldn't you take it from Srila Prabhupada? So very, very easy. So if one takes this instruction of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the guidance of Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas, and take advantage of so many books Srila Prabhupada has given us, then Krishna consciousness becomes very, very easy. Very easy. So that's the gift. that's the gift that is given. Practically everything is there. For us to go back to Godhead, we really don't have everything. Is just everything is given. Chant Hare Krishna, follow four regular principles, avoid the 10 offences, do a little service, have a little prasad, have a lot of prasad, do a little dancing, think of Krishna, and if you do that one lifetime, you go back to Godhead. On different occasions, Prabhupada said, if you can remain in this movement, performing those simple activities for one lifetime, you'll go back to Godhead. One lifetime. It's very simple, and therefore, but we see it doesn't always happen. I know 99% of the people I know who have come to Krishna consciousness have sort of wandered off. But Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple-hearted. The same thing he says here. Same thing. Very difficult for those who are duplicitous. Duplicitous means if you want to go back to Godhead, everything is there. Follow the simple process, just repeat the wonderful philosophy you've heard, enjoy the association of devotees, take prasad. If you want to be advanced spiritually and enjoy the material nature, you're going to have problems. That's the duplicitous. If we want to make a show of devotional life and at the same time break the regular principles, enjoy the material, then very difficult, very difficult. At that. But for the simple-hearted, it's very, very easy, very easy. So, and for those, one who is simple-hearted, they're very appreciative. One time Prabhupada said, the reason I've established so many projects is not that I'm wanting everyone to do big projects and to be working so hard. He said, I just want to make sure that everyone's got some service to do. To be a devotee, you don't have to do a big project. If you think, I'm never going to make it as a devotee. I'm just chanting Hare Krishna, eating a bit of prasad, thinking of Krishna. I'm never going to make it. I'm never going to be, I could have been a contender. It's not like that. Those projects just means that everyone has something to do. You can make some garlands, you can cut some vegetables, you can sweep the courtyard. You can just sit and talk with devotees. and chant Hare Krishna. It's all, you know, like that. You come about and place your head on the ground and offer your obeisances. There's so many things. And it's actually very, very simple. And for one who appreciates that everything is there, they're very grateful. For those, you know, if we're trying to, you know, enjoy the material energy, then sometimes, as Prabhupada said, you know, his disciples or followers will become angry at Prabhupada. That, oh, you are denying us the basic necessities of life. These, you know, four regulatory principles and, you know, and that. You're denying us the basic necessities of life, you know, so, you know, this is too much. You're asking too much. So then they're not grateful. In fact, they can become bitter, they can become angry, like that. So, I'll just read this verse again. I'll ask if there's any questions. What grateful soul is there who would not render his loving service to such a great master as the personality of Godhead? The Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection, though the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate him. Any questions or comments at all? Say that louder so everyone can hear. In which religion? Brahminical, did you say?
Like Christianity, Islam.
Yes, ah, yes. Yeah. Well, so, you know, understanding Krishna. Is in different stages. In Christianity, they understand there is one Supreme Lord who is a person. You know, that's the general understanding. So that's Krishna consciousness. Although, you know, that understanding, because when Krishna says aham, therefore, you know, there's one quote, I think it's in the first Testament, you know, it was Moses. He asked God, you know, appeared in the burning bush, who are you? I am that I am. See? So, you know, they're questioning, what does that mean? I am, you know. So therefore, you know, some impersonal, oh, you know, I also I am. So, you know, I'm also God. You know, we're all one with God. But actually, it's a very simple statement. You know, if someone says, I am, it means I'm a person. Aham. Krishna says, me, unto me. As soon as one says, aham, I am. They're very close, aren't they? I am, aham. It means I'm a person. Who are you? I'm a person. Understand that. Just have faith in that first. He's not going to reveal that, you know, I dance with the gopis, I have a peacock feather, you know, Moses comes down the mountain, Krishna, I've seen God, little blue boy, you know, they're already rioting down the bottom of the mountain. He's been up there for 40 days. They've already crossed the ocean, they saw him part the river, part the ocean. He went up the mountain, he was there for 40 days, and within that 40 days they lost their faith. And he's going to come down the mountain and say, oh, Krishna revealed himself, he's a little boy with a peacock feather and, you know, walks around. They're right. It's not going to happen. Understand this. I'm a person. See? That's Krishna consciousness. If they just understand that, then they're, you know, that is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. You know, because this Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya means living force. What is the study of Chaitanya Charitamrita? Chaitanya means living force. charita, characteristics, amrita, in mortality. That means the living force has characteristics. The living a living force means a person, living. Right? So the person, the living person, has characteristics, and those characteristics are spiritual. They're eternal. They're nothing to do with the body. They will not finish with the body. And what is the nature of Chaitanya? Chaitanya manifests as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the personality of Godhead, combined with his spiritual pleasure potency, Srimati Radharani, his Svayam Prakash, Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is the first manifestation, expansion of the Lord, and that Prakash means that that which presents or illuminates or manifests the Lord. So they have appeared like the sun and the moon. Generally the sun and the moon, they illuminate. When the sun comes up and the moon comes up, everything is revealed. It's illuminated. That's prakash. The sun comes up. Oh, there's the prakash. Now I see myself, I see you, I see everything. Generally they come up at different times, sometimes together. Krishna and Balaram, they appear together. And Balaram, Swayam Prakash, he manifests, reveals or illuminates the Supreme Person of Godhead. Therefore he is Guru Tattva as well. And from him all the various expansions emanate, including the Saktavesh avatars, who also illuminate or reveal Krishna consciousness, of which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura accepted that Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, they are all Saktavesh avatars. They are expansions empowered by Lord Nityananda or Balaram to reveal Krishna consciousness or the personality of Godhead. See? And Lord Nityananda showed us that Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, he is the Supreme Person of Godhead. Everyone should serve Lord Chaitanya, everyone. And I will serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Nityananda was an avadut, means that he's so much on the spiritual platform, he's above the rules and regulations, even that person should serve the Supreme Person of Godhead. And then he manifests as avatar tattva, as Advaita, Shakti tattva, as Gadadha, the energy of the Lord, and the living entity, Jiva tattva, as Shivas. And therefore, the five principles of the Absolute Truth manifested in the past times and understood in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and all of them comprise Chaitanya or living force. All of them are living beings and all of them have eternal characteristics. That is Chaitanya Charitamrita. So by Chaitanya Charitamrita you understand that God is a person, aham, I am that I am. His expansions, they're not manifestations of the material energy, they're eternal persons with eternal characteristics. His spiritual energy, he has no contact with the material energy, his spiritual energy is also a person. Everything in the spiritual world is personal. And the avatars, they are eternal persons, they're not temporary manifestations, although they come and go. And the jiva, they're also not a manifestation of material energy, they're also eternal persons. So, But within Christianity, Muslim religion, they are propagated by Shaktivesh avatars to manifest Krishna consciousness, to manifest Krishna, and that is there, to some degree. That bhakti is there. They're all praying to God, and the understanding there, by praying to God, they understand that although he is situated in one place, he is all-pervading. That is Krishna consciousness. That is not a material thing. They understand. God is in my heart. Therefore, persons who can't properly follow Christianity, but they're some, or Muslim religion, but they're somehow associated. Therefore, Prabhupada says that sometimes, the householder is thinking, he's praying to God, may the thief not come and steal everything from me tonight. And the thief, he also has some little understanding of God. You pray, he's in the spiritual world, but he's also in my heart. May I be successful in stealing. Prabhupada said, that's God's perplexity. But he has to answer everyone's prayers. Now, they understand that. God's in my heart, I'm praying, to be successful as a thief. I'm in the heart of, so he's hearing everyone's prayers. So you can see, even within the concept of Christianity or Muslim religion, there's actually quite a, significant understanding of the all-pervasive aspect and the Paramatma feature practically, although they don't call it Paramatma, they understand he's there at all times, at all places, even though he's situated in the spiritual world. So this is Krishna consciousness. It is there. The Krishna consciousness is there. And Prabhupada accepted that their prayers were an item of bhakti, which is vandana. So religion is considered, one of the four perfections, yeah. Yeah, because there is Sanatana Dharma, and then there's Svabhavika, or according to our conditioning by the modes of material nature. And most of the religious principles are dealing with our wants and requirements according to our conditioning within the modes of material nature. For a devotee, this is where it says pure heart. Most people are asking God for something under the influence of the material energy. A simple hearted devotee, they're chanting just out of love, appreciation. They're not asking for anything. If they sometimes pray to the Lord for protection, it's because I want to go on preaching, I want to go on serving. Sometimes devotees may pray to Lord Narasimhadev or different forms of the Lord, please give me protection. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also sang Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna, 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 Pahi Mam. Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Pahimam, Rakshamam, please protect me. What's the other one? Please maintain me. So that's the prayer Lord Chaitanya is saying. Please protect me, please maintain me. He's not saying maintain my material facility, protect my material facility. He's saying, my ability to serve you, you are maintaining that. You are protecting that. That you protect and maintain. So, for the simple-hearted devotee, they're not asking for the Lord for anything. They chant and they serve out of appreciation and love, and they pray to the Lord. You please always maintain me in this position as your servant, a loving servant. Material things are not asking for. But others are not necessarily, they may generally take up service or prayer for the material facility itself. Therefore, it's sort of, you know, it's within the material realm. So it's not wrong to pray for oneself as a devotee to maintain and protect one's devotional service, or to pray for other devotees. Yeah, you know what? In other words, some devotees can sit and chant and think of Krishna 24 hours a day, and they don't get restless. If you do get restless, there's so much service to do, which helps you to think of Krishna. So therefore, there's unlimited. So, and if you know, people have a propensity that you know they want some you know profit adoration and distinction, that is there. If someone has the quality of compassion to a very, very elevated state, then again, there's unlimited opportunity to deliver, you know, to take up preaching work. Because this is what we learn from Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda showed us that the main work, your first business in serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is to deliver the conditioned souls, is to canvass on behalf of Krishna. Krishna is saying, surrender to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna is saying, surrender to me. Lord Chaitanya is saying, surrender to Krishna. And Lord Nityananda, he goes out and canvasses, you know, you please. So in order to captivate persons from every single walk of life, so in other words, if someone is a great, you know, scientist, cosmologist, and they go to Mayapur and they see the Temple of Understanding, you know, with the very sophisticated, you know, three-dimensional view of the universe, where the mathematical calculations coincide with all the modern scientific calculations, then even the most difficult persons to deliver, they are some of the most fallen personalities. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found that the educated are some of the most difficult to preach to. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, because he could preach to so many people that the educated puffed up. So puffed up with their knowledge, you know, their material knowledge. Actually, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that when you take material education, already you're a fool, but when you take material education, you become more of an ass, more of a fool. You become a bigger fool. So in Kali Yuga, you have the fools, and then when you take material education, you become a very grand fool that is celebrated all over the world. Oh, this one's just an ordinary ass. This one is a very big ass, like that. He can bray, you know, like a donkey, in so many different ways. You know, through his books and this, that, and the other. You know, with Prabhupada was so expert, there is no one he left, you know, out of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's shelter. It doesn't matter how fallen you are, how sinful, even if you're the biggest fool. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you may say, what is Ganga speaking? I'm not saying anything. Krishna says it. Namam duskritano mudha papadjante narādama mayara parita jnana asuram bhavam asrita. Krishna says, now, apart from those who surrender unto me, everyone else is a miscreant. In two categories, is it? In 4 degrees. Those who are grossly foolish. So you've got those just in animal life. They're like, just, I'm this body, I'm here to enjoy the body, eat, fill the belly, you know, have sex life, you know, work hard like an ass, you know, and that's it for life. That's, you know, there's nothing beyond that. Lowest among mankind, you know, they have a wonderful, you know, civilized society, and still their consciousness is no better than the mudha, the ass-like person, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, those who are vastly educated. But if you ask them, you tell me one thing about Krishna, you tell me something about the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his material energy, his spiritual energy, how he manifests his spiritual energy, his incarnations, the living entities, the process of liberation. You tell me one thing. Silence. You hear the croaking of the crickets. Nothing. What is that education? How will you get out of the cycle of birth and death? Silence. What will happen to you after this lifetime? Silence. What is the result of your sinful activities? Abortion, intoxication, meat eating? Silence. Nothing. The knowledge is stolen by illusion. And then you have the atheists who have the nature of demons, who actually just simply enjoy committing, you know, atrocious sinful activities. So, you know, Krishna, he himself, and this is what we said, that Prabhupada says, if you accept Krishna as the Supreme Person of God, you immediately advance. Yes, I accept Krishna as the Supreme Person of God, but I don't accept what he says. How can I look at other people in this world that just because they're not Krishna conscious, that they're somehow rascals? As we said, Krishna consciousness, don't see that, you know, the Christians can be Krishna conscious. Many of them are Krishna conscious. The Muslims, Judaism. And there are many people in this world who will not affiliate themselves with a religious organization because they're disgusted with that organization. But they also, you know, have some Krishna consciousness inherent within their heart. It doesn't mean that because someone is not affiliated with a religion that they're not Krishna conscious to some degree. You know, there are many persons, they won't affiliate themselves with a particular church because of the stigma attached to those churches. But there's an element of understanding Krishna consciousness. You know, there's an element. I think there may be God there. And, you know, if, I don't know anything about it, but if there is, you know, I'm sort of thankful for what he's done in my life and how he's protected me. You know, there's an element of Krishna consciousness. But for others, without even... When you get down to the point that within your heart, that, you know, there's no trace of God consciousness, you know, you're just absorbed in mundane knowledge, mundane work, and mundane sense gratification. There's not even a speck of appreciation or a notion, not even to look into it, you know. Then that comes into this category here of those who, you know, there's no Krishna consciousness at all, and they're all miscreants. But we shouldn't look, you know, just because people are not coming to the temple or not wearing devotee, you know. Actually, there are many devotees, you know, really good devotees, who don't come to the temple. You know, it doesn't mean you have to live in the temple in somehow to, you know, manifest to others that I am surrendered to Krishna. When I used to do book distribution, sell full sets of books, the majority of people I sold the full sets to were people who never came to the temple. And somehow what had happened is someone had given them a BTG. They'd got a Bhagavad Gita. They lived out in the country. They lived in the city. They just didn't come to the temple. They weren't that sort of person. And when I went there and I'd show them the books and I'd say to them, would you like to buy a full set? And that's $700 in those days. And they'd say, yeah, I'll buy that. They're very interested. They didn't even come to the temple. They, you know, and I used to go and visit them. And they're like, you know, I'm up to the third canto there, and I have a little chat with them, and they didn't visit the temple. So, you know, don't have a narrow-minded view that just because someone is not coming to the temple, not Krishna conscious, they're a rascal. Whether they're, a devotee or someone who's never had association. But you should be able to recognize where there's not a trace of even gratitude within the heart. You know, that's a different thing. You know, then they come into these four categories, and that's what, you know, that's a whole different thing. In the early days of Krishna consciousness, we made that mistake, and we still make that mistake. I see it. That if someone is not coming to the temple and you're not seeing them serve 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, somehow or another, even as a devotee, there's some sort of a rascal. We should never have that mentality. Any other questions, comments?
Yeah. Well, you were saying earlier that if we are taking material education, if the word can be used, like the God can be used, but my question is related to...
In darkness.
So my question is related to when we send our devotee children to It's not a Gurukul. How can we, you know, I think a lot of the community here perhaps sends their children to those kinds of schools, but you know, we don't have a Gurukul. So how do we explain to children that do go to those schools, how do we give them about so they understand, okay, this kind of education, you know, they're going to learn different, like, things about the planets and then what Prabhupada teaches. So how do we address those discrepancies?
Yeah. All devotees have to function in this world as far as earning a living and keeping themselves healthy, you know, having a family, you know, getting a nice home for the family. It's a very difficult world to live in, and you know, previously you could actually live quite comfortably in this world without much of an education. In some countries, especially in the Western countries, the way things are constructed, if you don't have a certain level of education, your life, even as a devotee, is, unless you're sort of perhaps full-time selling books or a few things like that, but which is difficult, you know, it can be difficult if you're trying to raise a family and what have you. But your position is very, very difficult, very difficult. You know, most people will have to learn how to use computers as just a second nature skill, because sometimes you want to pay your bill and there's no option to pay except by some IT device. You know, I see my parents struggle with that, you know. And they're having to do it. They haven't studied, and then they're forced. So, you know, to function in this world, our children need to, you know, be able to do as much as those who have no Krishna consciousness or some Krishna consciousness. They need to be able to function as well as they do, if not better. the difference is that when we get our children educated, we know, Prabhupada called it the slaughterhouse of the mind, that some people actually come from a family background where there's some sense of God consciousness, or, you know, simplicity of heart and just some natural tendencies there. And when they go to the education system, that little mentality is just slaughtered, you know. So that's the danger. So what needs to happen is that the parents and the community should be able to give the children sufficient strength so that when they're within the educational system, within the work situation, they flourish and they're not handicapped by a lack of proper education or proper training. But although they're flourishing, their Krishna consciousness is not only protected and maintained by the grace of the Lord, but it's actually growing, you know, that they can, in amidst the darkest, you know, and foolish people, you know, the devotee children should be able to have a very strong sense of Krishna consciousness, although they may not necessarily always be able to express that. And they should be able to make rapid progress and go back to Godhead in full Krishna consciousness in this life. So, you know, there's a coupling of Krishna consciousness with education. It's sort of almost inevitable that, you know, unless, even if we had a gurukul and the children go to gurukul, you're still faced with a problem where once the children come out of gurukul, they're still going to then have to assimilate into society. And sometimes, if they haven't learnt that process of assimilation, they come out of the gurukul and it's like, I just don't fit in. People think I'm a freak. And I just want to be normal. And therefore the children, in order to be accepted, will just immediately embrace, well, whatever you're doing, I will do, because I hate being a freak, you know. So sometimes it's not the fault of gurukul, but it means that even within our gurukul, we actually have to incorporate the general understandings, the important features that are going on in material life. That has to be part of our gurukul process, and also interaction with people within the community, within the country, within the family. All of that has to be a part of the gurukul process, so that there's not this massive dilemma of leaving gurukul and all of a sudden there's the rest of the world which is just alien to me. It should be a process where, you know, they fit in with the rest of the world from the very beginning right through the gurukul years, but there is some special insulation and protection in the early years. You see, young devotees, we do the same. What to speak of children, even, you know, young devotees, we tend to try and be very careful when they go out of the association, devotees. We try to keep them in the association in those first few months or years as much as possible. Just stay in the association, because as soon as you leave, you know, that association, even sometimes for 5 minutes, they can actually fall down and actually, you know, want to give up their Krishna consciousness. That's for an adult. So there's certainly some protection. When a devotee or a child in Krishna consciousness is, you know, given a real good sense of Krishna consciousness and the ability to assimilate, it means they don't have to be attached to a particular temple. They can just go out anywhere in the world, as Prabhupada did. And Prabhupada said, an advanced devotee, they generate their own association. You know? And that's what he wants. Advanced means you just understand Krishna is the Supreme Person, I've got it. Whether you fully understand that by Shastra or what have you, but you just never lose. And what Krishna says, I accept. If you have that advancement, Wherever you go, you will generate association. And I notice with my children, to some degree, I've always tried to, myself and my partner, to, do some, Gurukul. Some of them went to Gurukul for some time. Some state education and some homeschooling, a bit of a mixture, and also joining different clubs like the dance club and, this, that and the other, or some sports or something like that. And what I found was that, being a vegetarian these days is very difficult. And in the first few days when they were at school, they'd come home and say, they're trying to get me to eat meat and so many things. And by the end of the year, I found that for all my daughters, five of them, all their friends became vegetarian. You see, so they're generating that sense of people gradually come to some degree to their level of consciousness. They don't go back. So that's what we have to do. So, when devotees take Western education, they don't accept that education. Prabhupada, what to speak of Western education, Prabhupada studied some of the different Mayavadi philosophies in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya says, you read this Mayavadi philosophy, it's doomed. And Prabhupada read, he read the, he'll tell you all about Vivekananda's, famous lectures when he went to New York and what have you, because he read them, he studied them. He studied them to preach against them. What to speak of studying just Western philosophy? He studied the Mayavadi philosophy. He read it. Because, you can, understanding what, just like when we study Chaitanya Charitamrita or Srimad Bhagavatam, you understand all the six schools of philosophy. The Mayavad Kapila, atomic theory, the theory of logic, the theory of karma mamamsa, Mayavada, you understand them all, because if you don't understand them all, how can you speak? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is going back a couple of hundred years, he was speaking in terms of, to the Christians, to the Muslims. If you read the Jiva Dharma, he explains a comparative understanding of Christianity, Muslim religion, with Krishna consciousness, because he studied them. He studied all the different main philosophies and mainstream sort of understandings and misunderstandings. He was also educated in the sort of Western education. Prabhupada was educated in the Western education. He went to the Scottish Church's school, and he still quotes in his lectures his economics teacher. What does he say? The main thing I learned from my economics teacher is that the family unit, without family affection, that is the very foundation of economic development. He quotes his economic teacher. See, within his economics teacher, what does economics got to do with Western economics, got to do with Krishna consciousness? He quotes in his lecture because what he spoke is exactly the same as the Srimad Bhagavatam. So when a devotee gets Western education, they spot, that's in the Bhagavatam, that's in the Gita. And they find a common ground, and that way they can not only just maintain, but then they can preach and help people. So, there's no disparity or, it just means that, when someone is vulnerable, we try and protect them, but we don't overprotect them. If I see you out of this temple, you're in Maya. If I don't see you walking around the sari or a dhoti in your tilak, you're in Maya. We shouldn't have that fanaticism. Not that you. Yeah. Does that answer that? Yeah. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yeah.